On February 10th of 1891, the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office granted the patent number 446054 to Elijah Bond and his partner, Jinu Thyagarajan. Now, over 130 years later, their innocent yet ominous invention can still be found in stores around the world. An invention known as the Ouija board. Tonight, I'll be talking about yet another case involving this nefarious innovation and the horror that inevitably follows it. I'll also be discussing experiences involving a doppelganger, dream visitations, a haunting in Maryland, strange phenomena in Tasmania, and a bizarre report of a shadow man that comes for a visit. Thank you for tuning in, and welcome back. I'm your host, Nick Ryan. Before I start tonight's episode, I'd like to recognize Sasha for their contribution on Patreon. Thank you for your generosity. And as always, the show wouldn't be possible without listeners like you. I appreciate your continued support. And now, let's begin with our first experience of the night, which comes to us from Savannah. And Savannah's experience is called Meaningful Dream. Savannah says, "Hey Nick, I've been listening to your podcast for a while now and absolutely love it. I'm not sure if this is exactly something that is paranormal, but I do believe it is something otherworldly. It's been almost 3 years since my dad passed away, and I felt that I should share my dream that I had the day before he passed away. Here's a little bit of background of myself. I was 15 when my dad passed away, and I have always believed in the spiritual world, and still do. I've experienced several small paranormal things, good and bad. I've also always had pretty realistic dreams, more so nightmares. For a little background on my dad was diagnosed with a terminal illness when he was in his early 20s. But it never really affected him until he reached his late 30s. My dad became severely ill in the last week of September and had to be hospitalized. The first 2 nights of him being in the hospital, he was still fully aware, but the morning of the 3rd day is when he became extremely disoriented and was constantly in and out of consciousness. Our whole family was in and out of the hospital, coming as soon as visiting hours started and staying until visiting hours were over. During the time that he was in the hospital, I had developed severe anxiety, causing me to never be able to sleep. On the 4th day of him being in the hospital, he was put on a ventilator. When I got home later that night, I was able to finally go to sleep. I started dreaming that I was in my high school running late for my Spanish class. As I'm walking to my Spanish class, I was stopped by the sight of my dad in the middle of the hallway. As I'm looking at him, I see my grandma, his mom, walk up next to him. I'm not sure why, but my grandma was in the form of her younger years. She had bright red hair, and her face was free of wrinkles. As she appeared, a bunch of balloons appeared as well. I should also add that my grandma is still alive, with gray hair and her face heavy with wrinkles. I have always been confused why so many balloons had appeared, and why the younger version of my grandma was in this particular dream. After watching my grandma walk up next to my dad, I stood there staring at the two of them. My dad then opened his arms wide, beckoning me to come and give him a hug. I then ran into his arms and was soon encased in a bear hug. As soon as his arms wrapped around me, I was consumed with relief. I was still aware what was happening outside of my dream. I knew that he should not be in my school, but in the hospital bed on a ventilator. I questioned him and wondered why he was here, and how he got better so fast. His only response was to squeeze me tighter, and then said, "It'll be okay." I woke up from my dream with tears streaming down my face, but I still felt the relief that I got whenever my dad hugged me. 20 minutes after I woke up, my mom told me that it was time to go. When we got to the hospital, I found out that my family decided to take my dad off the ventilator, meaning that he was going to pass sometime that day. I bawled my eyes out, devastated that my dad was officially going to be gone, but I still felt that relief. Only a couple of months ago, I talked to my sister about the dream that I had, and to both of our shocks, she had the exact same dream and feelings, except they were in a Dollar General store. Even our grandma was young in her dream. I still get chills whenever I think of it. I believe that dream was him saying goodbye to us and to give us strength because he knew the next day was going to be his last day. Sometimes that relief I felt in my dream washes over, typically on days that his passing hits me hardest. I'm sorry if this explanation is all over the place. I still get rather emotional whenever talking about his dream, and it causes my mind to work in overdrive. I'd like to thank you for offering an outlet to people who feel like they can't talk to anyone about their experiences. Stay well. Savannah. Our next experience comes to us from Goulet. And Goulet says, "Hi Nick, thank you for being a great host and being a safe place to share our experiences. You've shared two of mine, one about a green man, and I can't remember what the other one was about. Maybe a duende. Well, I've been talking to a coworker more recently about the paranormal because we found out that we have the same interest in the paranormal, and she told me that she has a shadow man that lives with her. After telling me about her experiences, about a week later I got home after work, and as usual I went to our guest room on the first floor to change, and as I was pulling down my bedtime shirt, the door to the room was cracked so that I could see outside the room. But nobody can see inside. I can see through the crack a tall man, almost shadow-like, and he looks similar to my fiancé. Same height, weight, walk, and speed. I asked, 'Babe, what are you doing?' as the direction he was walking was as if he was going to walk out to the front door, but the door never opened. Assuming that he was looking out the window beside the front door, I opened the bedroom door, and before looking up, I asked, 'Is there someone here? What are you doing?' Only to find out that nobody was there. I then turned the other way and walked toward the kitchen to find my fiancé by the fridge. I asked him if he was near the room or by the front door, to which he said, 'No,' and that he was in the kitchen the whole time. I then told him what happened and laughed and joked that my coworker's shadow man followed me home. During the last week of August, a few days after the shadow man experience, I went to the bathroom in the downstairs guest room, and as I was closing the door, I noticed that it would not shut. This door has no trouble closing and no trouble opening. It's not heavy, and I do not need to use force as the house shifted barely enough to make you have to lift the door to shut it entirely. Well, when I noticed the door wasn't closing, it was not even touching the door frame. It was as if someone's hand was between the frame and the door, trying to make sure that it didn't close. I had to use the bathroom so bad that I pushed harder and used the force of my body, but it still didn't budge. So I gave up and did my business, but after washing my hands, I double-checked the door. It was still light and didn't need any force to open or close. I then closed it all the way with no force at all, given the fact that it didn't shut because of the shifted house. But nevertheless, it closed all the way, still with nothing blocking it from touching the frame. I did an inspection to see if anything around it might have blocked it, but I found nothing. Later that night, as I was walking up the stairs to go to bed, we have to pass up a hallway that leads to the washroom. Then the other side of the stairs is the guest bedroom, both of which you can see without trying. I noticed at first, before walking up the stairs, that the laundry room light appeared to be on. They weren't, but it was all lit as if someone had a spotlight shining into that room. I shrugged it off as if my mind was playing tricks on me, and I made my way up a few more stairs, until I turned to the right, because now the guest bedroom appeared the same way. This was at a time that everyone was in their own rooms, and could not have played tricks on me. So I shrugged it off, continued upstairs, and called my fiancé to tell him what had happened. I laughed and said, Sherry needs to come and get her Shadow Man back. The next day, I texted my coworker saying that she needed to get them, and I added a laughing emoji, only for her to say that she actually hasn't seen them for a few days, which is unusual because she sees them at least once every day, and it's gotten to the point where her husband and son have seen them too, until they appeared at my house. This is my next story. My dog of 16 years passed in February. She was a little old lady, and we each took turns carrying her and giving her kisses and scratches, and making sure she knew that she was loved, until she crossed her rainbow bridge. Well, 2 nights ago, my sister and I were in the kitchen, and we both heard a bark that sounded exactly like Coco's, our late dog. It was so real-sounding that we continued what we were doing, until we realized that she had been gone for months now, and there was no way that we could have heard her. The other dogs around us are big dogs, and they don't sound like her, nor are they as close as her bark sounded. Another thing is that we both heard it, and we both thought the same thing. We both, without a doubt, know that this bark sounded like it was her, letting us know she wanted to come back inside. Without a doubt, I know it was her. I still get so heartbroken knowing she isn't here with us, and I still cry about it. But hearing that bark gave me the biggest smile and boost in happiness. Now I need to find a way to include her in my wedding. Thank you again, Nick, for all that you do. Goulet. Our next experience comes to us from Roy, and Roy's experience is called Hot Night in Tasmanian Winter. Roy says, G'day, Nick. I've only just found your podcast, although I listen to many similar ones. The first story I listened to was from Tasmania, and it intrigued me because of the location, so I thought that I would write to you and relate my little tale. In 2002, my wife and I spent 3 weeks traveling around Tasmania. We drove our four-wheel drive from Balboeing near Campbelltown in New South Wales down to Victoria, and we caught the ferry, the Spirit of Tasmania, across to Devonport. Arriving in Devonport at 10:30 p.m., we stayed overnight in a caravan park, and the next day we set off on our trip. We didn't have a plan as to where we would end up day to day, and just winged it, only looking for accommodation around 4 p.m. each day, unless we were staying in the same location for more than 1 day. We covered most of Tasmania and drove highways, dirt roads, beaches, etc. Tasmania is a fantastic place to visit, and we were there exactly 6 years after the Port Arthur massacre, and we spent 3 consecutive days walking through Port Arthur and taking ghost tours and a ferry ride to the Isle of the Dead, where only the landed gentry had marked graves, and the convicts were buried all around the rest of the small island in unmarked grave sites. You were literally walking over them without knowing if you were or not. We had a couple of minor strange events happen during our time at Port Arthur. Photos not turning out, batteries of our video camera missing, and then turning up unexpectedly, but nothing spookier than that, although I wished we had. There are many beautiful little towns in Tasmania, and we were having a great time, except, ironically, in a town called Campbelltown. My wife and I at that stage had been happily married for 27 years, and were married happily for another 15. But in Campbelltown, we had an unexpected argument. We were standing on an old bridge, where a murder had apparently taken place, and we found that we could not agree on anything, or where to go next. It finally turned out that we decided to walk to a nearby church and take a look inside. There was very little conversation between the bridge and the church, but as soon as we stepped into the vestibule of the church, the air seemed to clear, and we were happy again. The rest of the day was terrific, and in the afternoon, we decided to find a place to stay for the night. We found a place easily, and the owner said that we could stay in a house that was available, or a converted stable that was out the back of the house. The house looked a little spooky, and far too big for what we needed, so we opted for the stable. The stable was very quaint and had a small lounge area and kitchen, an open fireplace, and a bedroom and ensuite upstairs. Now, Tasmania in early May is pretty cold, so I thought that I would light the fire and warm the place up a bit. Kindling and firewood was supplied, so I thought that it would be no problem. We had an open fireplace in our home back in NSW, and it was never a problem to get it going. But not so in this place. Try as I might to get the fire going, it kept going out. I'd light kindling, newspaper, different stack methods. It just would not go. The plan was, get the fire going, let it get established, and then go to the pub for dinner, and the place would be cozy and warm for when we returned. However, finally, after spending almost an hour with the fire, I gave up, and we went to the pub for dinner. We walked home satisfied with our visit to the pub and our meal, and we went upstairs to bed. My wife fell asleep easily, but not me. I just could not get comfortable, and I found the place to be too warm. All this in the midst of a Tasmanian winter, where I couldn't even get a fire going. After a while, my wife woke up and asked if I was okay. I told her that I couldn't get comfortable in this place, and that I was sweating all over. She turned on the light and saw that I was a mess, and could not explain why I was in the state that I was in, and she was under the covers. I told her not to worry and to go back to sleep, and I would try to do the same. But it never happened. I just kept sweating and could not rest. So, after spending a few more hours awake and wondering what was going to happen next, I just resigned myself to wait for the sun to come up. Around 5 o'clock, I went downstairs and made a cup of tea, not interested in getting the fire going for myself, but I thought that I would try to light it for my wife's benefit. And it lit easily. I was baffled. It was the same wood as last night, and with little effort, the fire was going strong. With the fire now going, I started to cool down. My wife then came down, and we made breakfast, showered, and said goodbye to the stable. I can't explain what happened to us in Campbelltown, Tasmania, but there was something about that town that didn't completely agree with us. I believe there was something in that stable that just didn't want us there, especially me. Tasmania is a fantastic place, but I believe because of its convict history, there are many uneasy souls there. I think that it would have been easier for me if I had seen an apparition in the stable, or heard some voice saying, "Get out." But I'm left guessing. Anyway, I'm glad I found your podcast, Nick, and I will continue to listen. I am very pleased to hear stories from Australia. All the best. Roy. Before I continue, please consider showing your support by subscribing, sharing, and giving the podcast a positive review. Doing this helps Paranormal Mysteries reach new listeners in every corner of the world. If you'd like to support the show further, please visit me on Patreon, buy me a coffee, or PayPal, where you can make a donation, or become a member for as little as $1 a month. Benefits include ad-free episodes and early access to select shows. Your support helps make the show possible. And if you've had a paranormal experience, you can share it with me through email or voice message at sharemyevp.com. You can also get involved by joining the forum, subscribing on YouTube, and following me on social media. All of my support and contact information can be found at paranormalmysteriespodcast.com and in the show notes. With that being said, I'll be right back after this brief message. Our next report comes to us from Jay, and Jay's story is called Time Traveler or Doppelganger? Jay says, "Hi Nick, I just wanted to say I've been listening to your podcast for about 9 months now, and I'm hooked. Listening to people's experiences has been enthralling and has brought up memories of my own. Today I'd like to share a story that happened to me sometime in 2008. I had gone to a doctor's appointment, and when I got there, the receptionist looked up at me and said, 'Wow, that was fast. How did you have time to change your clothes?' I looked at her, confused, and asked her what she was talking about. And she said to me, 'Well, you were just here. You came up to the desk, started talking, and then mentioned that you had an appointment in a few minutes.' Still confused, I told her, 'Ma'am, this is the first time I've been here today.' She seemed surprised. She told me, 'I swear you were here. You came up, talked about 5 minutes, looked at your watch, and then said you had to go. I paused for a moment and asked her, "If I had an appointment here and I told you that it was in a few minutes, why would I suddenly decide to leave?" She then said, "I don't know, it did seem odd, but I didn't think to ask about it." The thing that baffles me to this day is that I asked her what I was wearing when I came in the first time, and she described an outfit that I had at home almost exactly the way it was. I know people may ask if I have a brother, and I do. He's 5 years older than me, lives in a different county about an hour away, have different moms, and we look nothing alike. People say that we all have twins somewhere in the world, but what are the odds that mine just happens to be in the same place that I'm going to be a few moments later? Or is it possible that in the future we have figured out how to time travel? I'll let you be the judge. Our next experience comes to us from Carol, and Carol's story is called Ouija Board. Carol says, "Hi, Nick. It seems that every time I hear a new episode, it reminds me of a similar experience I've had and want to share. When I was young, I was gifted a Ouija board. We're talking early 1970s. At the same time, I also became interested in and checked out occult books from the library. My mom and I lived with my maternal grandparents, as she was divorced from my dad. She was a woman ahead of her time, very strong and independent, yet she could also be very quiet and intimidating. My family attended church every week, and my grandmother was extremely religious and always prayed. If she knew the significance of the board, she never would have allowed it into her home. The same goes for the books. The occult books and Ouija board were located in a bedroom I was sharing with my mom, and she knew about them. Of course, being young, I played with the Ouija board and didn't know what I was doing, and was completely unaware that there were certain rules to follow. This naturally meant that I didn't do anything correctly, and it quickly led to chaos. It began one night with minor, unidentifiable noises. I thought that I was only imagining it and had just scared myself from reading the books, but it seemed to build more and more each night. On one final cataclysmic night, what started out as strange, non-placeable noises throughout the house soon evolved into full disembodied whispers. There was a tangible, oppressive energy seeping into our bedroom walls, and the sharp scratching sounds that followed betrayed its intention to infiltrate not just my room, but my own body and mind. Then the movement in my room began. I was terrified and helpless, and my mom thankfully felt and heard it all too. At least I wasn't alone. She was, needless to say, furious, and she warned me to remove the books from our house and return them without delay. I never saw the Ouija board again after that night, and things eventually died down in the house after that. Thank God. It's the one thing I've always implored to my son not to do: play with a Ouija board. However, I know that the more you prohibit someone from doing something, the more likely they are to do what you forbid, and that tendency has haunted me throughout my parenthood. My son is 26, and I believe him when he says that he's never messed with one and doesn't ever intend to, but I hate that the potential for negative energies to infiltrate his life, as it had mine, is still out there. That these seemingly innocuous traps are in the world, just waiting to be found. I truly feel that if my son hadn't already experienced considerable paranormal activity in our current home while he grew up, he would have already been tempted to experiment with one. Thanks again, Nick, for the safe sharing space. I genuinely enjoy listening to everyone's stories, and I love how much they validate your listeners' experiences. It really lights a fire in me to share and connect with the other listeners. May you, your family, and your listeners find peace of mind, body, and spirit. Your loyal fan and patron, Carol. Our next experience comes to us from Marcia, and Marcia's experience is called My Year in a Haunted House. Marcia says, "I never believed in ghosts until I was in my early 30s and moved to the eastern shore of Maryland. On December 1st, 2005, our family moved into a rental house just outside Salisbury. Everything was fine and I didn't notice anything out of the ordinary. Shortly after moving in, I got my two school-aged children off to school and my husband left for work, so I climbed back into bed where my 18-month-old was still sleeping. She was just waking up when I heard a little girl talking in the living room down the hall. I held my breath and listened more carefully, and just as I was convincing myself that it was my imagination, my daughter sat up and said, "Sissy's here," and this is when I knew that she heard it too. I told her that her sister was at school and that no one was here, but she had to go and look for herself. I brushed off the incident. Not long after that, my 10-year-old daughter told me that one Saturday morning that before I woke up, she was sitting on the couch watching cartoons. From one end of the couch, you could see up the hall to the bedrooms. As she was watching cartoons, she was distracted by two white mist-like little girls that came out of our bathroom, skipped down the hall, and then went into my bedroom, where my husband and I were still sleeping. I asked why she didn't come and get me, and she said that she didn't want to go where the little girls went. When I asked her what she did do, she said, "I moved to the other end of the couch, so I couldn't see down the hall." Not long after that, I saw one of these little mist girls cross the hall in front of me as well. One morning, I woke up and was checking the TV for a school delay for fog, which I had never experienced anywhere else I'd ever lived. And as I watched the delays scroll across the screen, I heard a child crying. I immediately went and checked all three of my kids who were still sound asleep. I then went back to the TV and continued to watch, and I then heard laughing. It made me smile knowing that I made the child laugh. This little girl or girls never made me feel afraid, but my husband didn't believe me until one day he bought the kids one of those big marbled purple and white balls that make that sound when it bounces that you recognize from your childhood. That night we went to bed, and my husband heard it bouncing and bouncing in the living room. He got out of bed and went to check it out, and it was just sitting in the middle of the living room between the couch and the television. The next day he asked if I had heard it, and told me his story. I was up before everyone that morning and found the ball in the kitchen, about 30 feet and around the corner from where he saw it, at 2 a.m. We had many other small things happen in this home, often hearing footsteps walking down the hall. I asked our landlord if anyone had ever mentioned a ghost in the home, and he said that no one had ever complained. Even after we were moving out, he came to give us our deposit back, and I asked him again, "Since we are moving out of state, you can tell me the truth," but he swears that no one has ever said anything. So I told him, "Well, the next time someone asks, you can tell them, yes." I do have another incident that happened in this house that was not so sweet as the little mist girls, but I will save that for another time. Thanks for taking the time to listen and giving me a place to share. I hope you enjoyed tonight's episode, and before I go, I'd like to thank Savannah, Goulet, Roy, Jay, Carol, and Marcia for coming forward with their experiences. And remember that if you'd like to submit your experience or learn more about supporting what I do, you can find all of my contact and support information at ParanormalMysteriesPodcast.com, as well as in the show notes. Until next time, thank you so much for listening, and please remember, don't wait for the unknown to come to you. Get out there and find it.